I'm all about building communities, celebrating unique journeys, and sharing stories about the paths people have taken to enter the tech industry. Join me as we explore the skills my guests have learned in their prior jobs, schooling, or life experiences, and how they apply them to their current roles in tech.
My guest today is a first-generation American. He is a founding member of the government transparency group Open Austin and ran for Austin City Council in 2016. His professional experience also includes work as a social media and community manager for the software company Atlassian and various roles for the computer processor company AMD, Dell, and IBM. He serves as a board member for South by Southwest Interactive and is a developer advocate for Daily.
When you get started, it's not going to be as hard as you think, and no matter how long you're in it, you don't know as much as you should. And so find people who you want to emulate or where you want to grow to, and then they can help put things in context and perspective.
I'm your host, Lauren Lee, and this is We Belong Here, lessons from unconventional paths to tech.
His name is Wesley Faulkner. Wesley, welcome to We Belong Here.
Hi, thanks for having me. So excited.
So excited to be chatting with you today. Let's start at the beginning, shall we?
Yes.
Can you tell me more about the experiences that you had before the tech industry?
Yeah. So both my parents are immigrants. They're from different countries and they came to the United States and then they had me. The reason why, like you said, go back to the beginning, and I'm going so far back,
is
to put some context as to their understanding of school, technology, jobs. They're both from like very rural countries. And so when I grew up, I didn't grow up with technology around. I think the fanciest thing we had was maybe a television. So my first experience with touching a computer really was going into college. I didn't have a computer before that. I watched television. I loved Star Trek, loved Doctor Who, loved the whole sci-fi thing. And so I went to school and majored in electrical computer engineering because it sounded cool. Like, who wouldn't want to do that?
You're like, yep, that sounds really fascinating. I'm in.
Yeah. Like, and so it was a lot different than I thought. It's coding a little bit, but it's more low level coding. So I did some microcontroller assembly, that kind of stuff, some AND and NOR gates, those types of things, so logics.
So it was what were you geared, hoping it was going to be?
I wanted to build my own robot, but
got it. The sci-fi bit, got it.
But like, I mean, I was not grounded in like reality. Literally, I was not. I had no idea how to get into tech, but that sounded like a ticket out of there. So, I grew up in Houston and went to University of Texas and majored in electrical computer engineering. And I remember my first C++ class. The professor explained something and I didn't understand it. And I went to his office
like
hours.
Like in foreign language of like,
yes.
Yeah.
And it was one of those giant weed out classes, like 300 people in a classroom.
Yep. Like a 101 kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I washed out. I did not graduate, but I got a job working for Dell as a phone technician. So someone's has an issue with their computer, they call up and I would answer.
Sure.
I liked that job because I felt very empathetic. I could say, oh yeah, I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
No. That's not the computer. That's the monitor. Maybe it's your keyboard that's not working, not your computer. So those things that people ran into, I felt like I could relate to them. It was easy to have that conversation. And that was basically it. I thought that my life in tech would be kind of like that. On the periphery, on the outside.
Yeah, you're kind of like working for a tech company. And so in a way, like you're in it, you're in tech. And so, sure, I can see that.
Yeah. And I eventually went up in the ranks at Dell. But once again, that's more on the hardware side. So from working on computers or desktops, I worked on laptops. And then from laptops, worked on servers. And then from servers, I moved into Fibre Channel storage arrays from EMC for their SANs. And I did that for a bit. Once again, flying to a location, bringing out my screwdriver and wrench and fixing things.
Cool.
And the dream call came when AMD, a headhunter, contacted me and said, hey, they're looking for someone. Are you interested? Okay. I said, heck yeah. And that's started my journey as a product development engineer.
What does that mean? Product development engineer.
Have you seen Office Space?
Yeah.
And there's the guy who says, well, I'm a people person because I talk to engineering and you don't want them talking to customers. That was kind of like what I did between engineering and marketing inside of AMD.
I had a role like that once, a technical product manager, like speak the language of both parties kind of thing. Yeah. Okay. But cool to like get that opportunity and a headhunter, like that's exciting. I don't know. I just think there's something really like, ooh, you're looking at me. I don't know. I transferred into this world from being an English teacher and the world of like education and that industry, there's just like no such thing as a recruiter calling you up. And so I'm always just like I feel fancy about that. But now it's, you get kind of bored when like LinkedIn, you're like, quiet down, but cool. Nonetheless.
Yes. I wasn't so fancy back then. So I get those requests too, saying, hey, we think you'd be good for this role. I was like, that's nice that jobs are coming to me, but it wasn't the case back then. And so I started the role, being in between engineering and marketing, but not really doing a lot in either. Yeah. So I learned a lot. That's where I became a sponge. So I learned terminology from both the marketing and the engineering side. The engineering part scratched my itch that I got in college because I could really understand how the pieces were put together, the building blocks, but I never did any of the coding. And in the marketing, I would hear their initiatives of how they're trying to position things from the consumer standpoint.
That's so important,
And it was a dream job for me. I loved it. And I started getting on social networks and Twitter especially and started tweeting about like, ooh, I'm working on this today. Yeah. Or I'm working on this. And this is in the early days of Twitter. And so back then, it's if you did a search for AMD, I would be the only one that would show up.
Got it. So functioning as the face
and
of
I
the
wasn't
company.
Doing But I was like, I wasn't sanctioned and I just did it because I truly loved my job and I was not trying to do marketing, which was also a new thing. People did social, not for marketing, but just to.
Right. Or to be like authentic online. That was,
Yes. But everyone was generally like an entrepreneur or a solopreneur trying to sell their goods and services and wares. And I was part of a big company, not trying to sell anything. But just sharing my love
for what I did and where I did for. Yeah, love that.
Like I would even say like, look what they have in the cafeteria today.
Yeah.
Ooh. And then when social media became a thing and AMD still didn't adopt it, there are companies like Forrester or Pew Research, like all these companies that would look to see what companies are doing to get into this new digital space. And so I started getting contacted saying, hey, can you tell us what AMD is doing to do in social? I'm like, I can tell you what I'm doing.
Right. Functioning as, doing their DevRel work for them while they're not even, they don't have that team even.
Yeah. And so I started working through PR saying, these people need to want to talk to me and I want them to connect them to you. And how do we do that? And that gave me, and since I was already working with marketing and then I'm talking to the people in PR, that kind of let me understand who's who in those different departments and then AMD is like, we should start doing social media. And I got pulled into their first social media council and started teaching people how to use Twitter and how to do a retweet and how to use hashtags.
I love it. That's hilarious. Fun.
And it's funny how like it seems so simple, but it was kind of really foreign to them. And I did that for years. And let's just say because of egos and people were territorial about that work, I was forced out. And that was like my first taste of like being out there, being public, using my voice. And I really loved it and I was addicted to it.
Yeah.
And that's when I left AMD and I did social media marketing for about 10 years.
Got it. So social media marketing, was that fulfilling on that side of the tech front of things? Like, were you, what did that, were you kind of launching campaigns for folks and kind of helping them develop their voice, if you will?
Yes and no. They're for multiple size companies, but I'm going to let you in a little secret. People in tech think people in marketing don't know what's going on. Sometimes it's true because I've definitely met those people, but it wasn't true with me. But it was like a hurdle that I had to overcome. And also, if you're in marketing and you're higher up in marketing, there's a stronger possibility that that is indeed true. And so me being a person who had somewhat of a technical background, at least I understood what
you got the lexicon of it. Yeah. Like you could hang, with the language, and that's a huge hurdle, I think, in itself. So yeah, got it.
And, but the hardest part is I always had to struggle with saying, this is what we should do. This is not what people who are technical, what they like to hear. This is not how we should position it. And I've never felt legitimate, not from management and not from the technical sphere. So I was almost like in the out group from both camps.
Yeah, that's rough. It doesn't feel like you're a part of either party. And so then it's there on an island. Ugh.
Yeah, I just didn't fit anywhere. So a friend of mine who worked for IBM said, hey, we're doing this thing called developer relations, and we would like for you to be a developer advocate. Are you interested? And it felt like it was in a technical role. So I would have a technical title, and it was for a technical company. But they also wanted me to do the thing that I really wanted to do, which is like be amongst the people, talk to people, and break down really complicated technical ideas into chunks that were relatable and stop talking about shovels, but talking about building something with the tools instead of just the nitty gritty.
The product, selling
and that's
it.
What I
100%.
Yeah. I think that is one of, sorry,
please, I'm going to go off on tangent, for just a second. Please.
One of the big problems with tech in general, like tech marketing, is that they think that they're the only product a customer uses. Like, no. Not even maybe in that group, but you can't just say everything else sucks and we're the greatest. Realize that people are using your products in the context of all these
other all products. These use cases that they might have, and it might not always be the right solution, and that's okay. Oh gosh, I couldn't agree more. Retweet. I like really feel that, and I feel really. I try to push my team to use our product in conjecture with another in tutorials, like show the world how you can use ours with another and build something really cool and incredible then, so that it helps kind of fill those spaces of use cases of, I don't know, even then to like, you know, push beyond, okay, maybe this is the scenario yours works with, but then maybe acknowledge when it might not also, and just be real. That's just the more authentic way to tackle it, I think. But try to explain that to a CEO, I think, is a little tough.
Yeah, because what you should really be doing is investing in customer success. 100%. And if that's, even if it's not with your product, right? If your product is going to be a bad fit, make sure you try to say, hey, if you're wearing this, don't use our product, because it will have, it'll be a bad experience. Yes. And then they'll like, oh, that person's honest and they want me to succeed. And that's some of the problems that I had.
Got it.
Like in the marketing realm is like, it's very like you work for us, you promote this product and that's all you promote and nothing else exists. And so
it's really hard to build trust then.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so going into developer relations, being a developer advocate for IBM, I couldn't say that we were the best. We were IBM in tech. I mean, maybe like a few decades ago when Watson was winning Jeopardy, but back, but like IBM servers, IBM storage, IBM mainframes, it's harder to say, just go with us. Don't look at any other competition. We were not the dominant player in those spaces. And so we had to acknowledge that. And so that's what I tried to bring to the company. And I loved being able to say, I understand we're not your first choice or your second or your third. Or let's not put a number on it.
Let's talk about those things that you need to solve and maybe why we might help.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And sure. So, you know, not trying to spit polish a turd, really just like calling a spade and mm-hmm. coming from that angle. And so I loved that and that aspect of it. And then I went to, for the first time ever, DevRelCon in San Francisco.
Wait, what year?
2019.
That was my first one also.
Hello, We Belong Here listeners. Today's episode is sponsored by the new We Belong Here Discord community. I recently have been thinking about ways to continue the conversation with guests after each episode, to foster our community, share resources, and stay connected to both the guests and listeners. And I'm excited because we've created a We Belong Here Discord server. What is Discord, you might be asking? Well, it's a voice, video, and text communication service to talk and hang out with your friends and communities. I know, neat, right? It will be a place for us to connect, share resources, mentor, and build community together. Everyone is welcome, and it promises to be an incredibly inclusive space. It's important to me that everyone has an inclusive community where everyone feels welcome and supported. And this could be yours. If this sounds like something you'd be interested in joining, please do. The link to join is bit.ly/webelongdiscord. That's bit.ly/webelongdiscord, DISCORD. Or find a link in my bio on Twitter or Instagram at Lolo Coding. I'm super excited to see you there.
Oh, yes, it was amazing. I went there and I was like, these are my people. This is where I belong.
The exact same way. Oh my gosh.
And that totally cemented that.
Yeah.
Being a developer advocate is where I wanted to be. And
I love it.
And the people who were, I was around it, I wanted to do it with them.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. I can really relate to that feeling. Okay, cool. So then why move on from, wait, are we going to skip over your run for city council? Are we going to dabble towards that? Are we? I think the timeline passed it. So
I think we can establish that I don't stand for the status quo. If I see something's wrong, I want to change it. And it's hard for me not to fight for that. This was in Austin. This is 2016, the same year that Trump was running. I've always felt like things could be done better, smarter. Sure. And I'm in Austin. So, I mean, come on. Yeah. Why aren't we using technology to drive efficiency? Why are we focusing on some of the big companies that are here locally, but not the small mom and pop shops that could really benefit from the windfall that technology has brought the city? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wanted the city to be more equitable. I wanted technology that has guided my life and my education. And I wanted that for everyone. And I was in the District 2 is where I was running in. District 2 is right by the airport in Austin. If you've ever been there, it's kind of like out in the middle of nowhere. Downtown is a bit of a drive. There are no real office parks. There aren't really the home prices are cheaper. That's why I live there. But it seemed like it was like siloed off. The bus system wasn't really
not interconnected. Really
like not connected to the rest of the city, not in a way that was really efficient. And this is in the wake of Austin banning Lyft and Uber. And so transportation just really was horrible in that part of town. And I was like, and my council person was the one who voted against it. And so I was like, I can't stand. Because it was one thing about transportation, but other thing was that because of the lack of jobs in tech, a lot of people drove for Lyft and Uber for supplementing their income. And it was really hurting the people around us. And so I tried to push forth my vision of what Austin could be, and which is a more equitable, well-rounded approach to the city. And unfortunately, I didn't win.
Are you curious of ever dabbling into it again, or was that your foray?
I think that was my one shot. The reason for that is I have a young family now, so it's hard to juggle everything.
Oh, congratulations.
I have a job that I really do love.
Yeah.
And, I'm able to use, I'm going to fight from the outside in. And you could see, like you mentioned in the intro that I work for, I helped found Open Austin, which is to try
tell me about that.
It was to help open up Austin's databases to put it behind an API so people can make their own projects using the data that the city is collecting.
Love it.
So their 311 information data, being able to make your own app to like make your own request for service, demographic information, all that stuff that we're collecting, making it more accessible for everybody.
Oh my gosh. Listeners, if you were wanting to like play with an API, that sounds like one just like full of data to really, you know, there's just so much to be done with that. Oh, that's fascinating. Cool. Yeah.
Real-time traffic data, that kind of stuff.
Love that.
Being able to like use the information that our taxpayers are paying for, but make it so that everyone can use it. And so
that's just a side hustle of yours.
I'm less involved today, but we put that in motion and the organization is still going strong. It's still, they're still opening things up continuously to make it, you know, more from a data standpoint, at least that's more equitable.
Yeah. I mean, that transparency is admirable. I'm impressed. That's really, really cool. Neat. Okay. So I just totally tangented us. Tell me about, bring us to today, I suppose then, as a developer advocate at Daily.
Daily. Yes.
Daily.
So not the Daily.
Daily. So it's a relatively new role for you. Yes.
Yes. I just started last year in the middle of a pandemic. I lost my job in April of 2020.
Oh my gosh.
Really rough summer, really rough year.
Dark. And I'm sorry to hear that. Wow.
It's one of those things where, you know, I was drowning, everyone's drowning. And I was on that door seeing the other lifeboats go by, and I was rescued by Daily. I think it was meant to be. This is the best company right product, right time, because they do video in a video API during a pandemic when people are doing remote. But also the people, like, you've heard the structure of a company gets reflected in their products.
Of course.
Like you hear Google has like multiple chat services because they're all siloed off and they're not really talking to each other. And it really just shows in their products.
100%.
And you could probably, they probably like fire groups at a time because they just kill products left and right.
Yep.
That's, I mean, it's kind of like, you can kind of see how company culture influences the actual products. And I think Daily is super customer centric. They really care about people, and it shows in their products. And I love working there, and they care and love for me back. And and I think that's why I'm so excited. Like, I'm talking about it, and I don't have to pretend to love.
Yeah. And it feels fun to be excited about the product and what you're building and what you can create, because then that makes your job so much, I don't know, it feels like natural and easier. And it's like just an extension of what you'd be working on anyway. And so it's like, of course I'll tell you about how you can build this. Like, come on, let's dream about it, or like, let's build it together. And it just feels, authentic too, I suppose.
Yes. Yeah. Like flashback back to when I was at AMD and I was just pointing my camera at the lobster bisque in the cafeteria. I'm like,
we have lobster bisque today.
Yes.
Oh, that's funny. I really vividly remember my first like week at GoDaddy when I was a TPM there, and they had walking desks, the treadmill desks. And every day I was tweeting, like, I am tweeting from a walking desk right now. So stoked. But I mean, that was just, it was just a fun, like, tech perks were new to me. And so I was like, you know, a kid in a candy store. But okay, cool. Well, it sounds like you ended up in a really neat place. And like, yeah, I think things kind of end up working themselves out in a way to end up, I don't know. It sucks, obviously, to lose your job during a pandemic. Like, you wish that upon no one, not your worst enemies. But it's silver lining neat that you're really happy with where you ended up.
Yeah, it's really, really great. And I would say that every chunk of moving forward was a combination of luck, and also willingness to go through the uncomfortable transition of change. And that I didn't realize until having several different conversations, especially during the pandemic, when people are thinking about what they want to do and how to move forward. Even myself, I went and got a mentor to kind of make sure I was on the right path. Because when I lost my job, I was like, do I want to get another developer advocate job? Can I be successful? And I think if I never made the change of working on servers and storage units to working like as a product development engineer at AMD. If I didn't make the switch to move from that to doing social media marketing and then from that to doing developer advocacy, I mean, I would probably just be in that first job. I was probably still being at Dell, just figuring out a place for me there. And so it's a skill that I didn't realize I had, or that was something that I saw as a skill. But that ambition, that change, that able to say that my expertise is good and I think I can make a dent in this space has really helped me.
Question, how did you go about leveling up your skills when you were to make the move from a social media marketing to developer advocate? I imagine there has to be some bit of like code new teaching yourself, or I'm sorry, I'm saying that oddly, but like, do you understand what I'm like?
How did I was able to decode what you said?
Oh, great.
Yes. So there was like an upskilling that had to happen. From the work that I did as a marketer, of course, some of that was via osmosis, like being physically around people who are having these conversations and dealing with these challenges out in the open or in public, so to say, in the office. And so coming back, actually my hardest challenge was to be able to really like lock onto that and get rid of some of my marketing speak and the nebulous talk and like this, I like to call it a sphere of confusion, because if you don't give enough information, then people start filling in their own detail. They're like, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. And so the sphere of confusion was the part that I had to get rid of. And in order to upskill and actually fill it with more details, it was a lot of reading white papers, reading really technical problems, like in Stack Overflow, what people were dealing with. And then finding people in the company that actually knew the information and just say, here's the problem. Walk me through on all the steps to get to the solution.
Love that.
So that way I helped understand not only the context of the problem, but the tools used to whittle down the problem and to figure out what was going to work, what wasn't going to work. The context of the competition, which is really the biggest part of why we did things a different way and what are the other ways of doing it, was really good to have someone to walk me through it. So I can't take a lot of credit about the work that I did myself. A good thing about from being social, I'm a people person. So so I did the work to find these people to build up that relationship and then convince them to help me. I really like to understand through the eyes of the people who don't know the right answer, and also through the eyes of the people who have an abundance of information, and how they quickly try to zero in on that solution.
Both lenses are important. I love that. That's really, it's a really thoughtful way to approach something and to take on new information as well. To then kind of build up your catalog of understanding and then capabilities, and also being aware of what then you don't know and how to fill those gaps. Oh, that's really, that's great. Okay. So can you tell me about a time that you felt like an outsider and maybe how you dealt with those feelings?
A time. Let's narrow this in. A big chunk of when I was doing social media marketing, I didn't like an outsider, because I'm also opinionated. And that is something in terms of marketing in the corporate structure, the politics, to borrow a phrase of it, is that you basically jockey for survival and for dominance. And you don't. So the goal is to be successful, to elevate yourself. I mean, that is the means for success is to be successful in what you're doing. For me, when I did those jobs, I didn't care about my personal success. I cared about the success of the product and the success of the user. And so I felt like a lot of the times when I said, hey, we should be transparent about what we're doing here, a lot of people would back off to say, oh, no, you're going to expose all the things we do wrong.
You don't want to share that. Yeah.
You're going to
be vulnerable. Yeah. Yeah.
And I always want to be like, well, I mean, but our users are smart. Let's tell them the things that we do wrong and that doesn't work. And then they'll understand. And then when we have problems, they were like, oh, yeah, it's because of they're on an old version of Elasticsearch or something, Elasticsearch, it's something like that. So like, let's do this stuff and put it out there. And that from a marketing standpoint, that was alien. That was only show your best side, only talk about the good stuff. And me being naive and overly realistic about what our products did, what I felt very outside-ish. And that's from my Dell days of when this is also going to date me. I did sales support, and many times someone would sell a Dell computer running Windows NT and then sell like a USB mouse. And for those who aren't as old as me, NT had no USB support. And so people will get a computer and the product doesn't work. And they're like, well, it has a USB port, so it should work. And I was like, I'm sorry, it's NT. They don't have support for USB. And the salesperson would be happy because they would make the sale. But the tech person on tech support who would have to take that call would be furious.
Of course. With
putting them in this situation. And so I learned early on that the delta between expectations and reality, if it's too wide, you're going to be putting a lot of people into different difficult situations.
Yeah.
So the goal should always be to reduce the delta between reality and expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I tried to do, is not just talk about the good stuff, but talk about all the realistic bad stuff. It's like when you read a Amazon review, and you're going to get a chair, and the chair says, like, I mean, the reviews would say something like, scratches hardwood floors. I wouldn't buy this. But then you're all carpet, but you're like, okay, well, I don't have that problem. I feel better about my purchase, even though I read a bad review. I think it's the same thing with technology.
Yeah, it's incredibly valid. And leads, again, back to this kind of theme of trust, right? Like that then, you know, there's a better relationship and a fond feeling of like, oh, I know that they have, they're not going to lie to me. They're not going to be phony. And maybe right now it's not the right solution for me, but in the future, if I'm needing something, I'll think of that. And so that's the goal ultimately. So that's, I think that that is a really cool lesson to learn from that. Although it's probably, it sounds as though that was really rough being in the marketing world with that lens.
Absolutely. And the thing is, when like you're saying, trust is so important, and if your users don't think you're truthful, they're going to try to seek that truth somewhere else.
Elsewhere.
And it's going to be somewhere else where your company doesn't either have a voice or they don't have visibility. Mm-hmm. And that is just bad for the company to understand their shortcomings and be able to, if that truth is misinformation too far in the wrong direction, not being able to chime in and clarify that.
Yeah, I like that. That's interesting to think about. Okay, so do you have any advice for someone who is curious about transitioning into tech that you can share?
What I would say is look at Freed Code Camp. Start going through the motion there. And it's a low risk way of dipping your toe into learning something new. The other is to find your network of people that you want to aspire to be. Because when you get started, it's not going to be as hard as you think. And no matter how long you're in it, you don't know as much as you should. And so find people who you want to emulate or where you want to grow to, and then they can help put things in context and perspective about where you think you are and where you think they are, and kind of dispel that myth of people being 10x coders or not being able to have a life outside of coding.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Okay. I have recently been adding this into episodes. Can we do a rapid fire question round?
Sure.
Okay. Favorite app on your phone?
Ooh. I would say Slack.
Yeah. Yeah. Favorite tech stack?
I'm leaning towards Next.js right now. Cool. But I'm still early in the days there.
Yeah. Okay. Coffee, tea, morning. How do you start your day?
I do not drink caffeine.
Neither. You are not the first person to tell me that. I'm just so married to my coffee that I don't understand that world, but that is probably very healthy for your body.
It's just a habit I never formed. I also don't drink alcohol. So I stay away from caffeine, alcohol, because I've always felt like sensitive to drugs in general. Like I don't mm-hmm. ever want to be dependent. And so mm-hmm. I kind of stay away.
Do you have a vice, or are we perfect over there in Austin?
Gosh, I'm so ADD. My vice is distraction.
Distraction. So
it could be hearing about some sort of thing, and then I go down mm-hmm. the YouTube rabbit hole.
Yes.
Or I get, like, I subscribe to Adafruit, so I get a box and I will tinker with that and lose all sense of reality. So I think that's probably my vice, is I think going down the click hole of life.
Yeah. Do time warp where suddenly it's like hours later. Yeah.
Like this, you can't see in video, but like this studio setup, I was like, ooh, let me tweak that or let me put that there. And I look down like, oh, 2 hours have passed. Oh,
I love it. Yep. Got it. Okay. How would you define your style of learning?
My style, I would say my preference mm-hmm. is to be more realistic with the 80%. Instead of trying to learn the 100%.
All of it.
I think you can get up to speed pretty quickly with 80%. It's the 20%, the edge cases and the outside chunk stuff mm-hmm. that have the most confusion. And mm-hmm. sometimes I think, like, a lot of people will try to say, let's get all the foundational knowledge out of the way and you learn how things work. I was like, no, tell me a use case. Tell me how that works. And let's go outside like in concentric circles and I'll expand my knowledge.
I like that, because then you have a product, you've used it, you've played with it, and you have a demo of it, but then can kind of add on top of, that's thoughtful. It's really smart. I haven't heard that sort of answer before. I like it. Okay. If you could go back, tell yourself some bit of wisdom, when would you pick and what would you say?
So there are many times, here's the truth. I would not be here if I planned it.
Mm.
Right. So like, everything has been opportunity and luck. So I would hate to give me some sort of information that would say, like, here's how you can stay at Dell longer or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it would probably be like some stock advice.
Sure. Okay. What are you going to learn next? What's something you're excited to learn in 2021?
So being at Daily, we're based off WebRTC. And so I am digging deep into it, and I'm developing an intro to WebRTC talk that I'll be submitting at different conferences. And I hope to dig deeper into that. So start making some mistakes in public and refining my knowledge on it.
Cool. Yeah. It's a fun space to be in. I love that. Last one. What is a good book you've read recently?
The Case Against Empathy.
That title is... shocking.
Yes. It is an amazing book. I would definitely suggest reading it for anyone who's interested in talking about care and compassion, because that's what they're saying is more important than empathy. For instance, if you're seeing a baby cry, you can't put yourself in their position, but you can understand what caring for a baby looks like. When a kid is saying, I want to eat a bowl of Skittles for dinner, and you're saying, no, you can't do that. Yeah. From an empathy standpoint, you can possibly put yourself in that position saying that sounds so amazing. But, you know, if you care for that kid, you don't let them do it. And how this empathy is a spotlight. It kind of focuses on one thing. For instance, if you hear about an early release program and then someone was let go and they killed someone, you're like, we need to stop this early release program. Because you hear that one case and you empathize with that one case. But then if you look at the statistics and you see on the whole, murders went down because of this program, then it would change your perspective. So empathy can sometimes be a really good spotlight, but that just means everything around it is dark. And so I really would highly recommend that book.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. We'll include it in the show notes for sure. Okay. So make your shout out. What are other things that you want listeners to go check out beyond what we've already said?
I would say one thing that's really, really interesting these days is the technology space around processors. So if you're into hardware, the M1 is a good example, but there are several different architectures and different approaches that are coming into view right now. So if you just do a Google search for hardware accelerators, I mean, you've heard of GPUs, you've heard probably of TPUs, but there are so many different kinds of accelerators. And in the M1, there's a JavaScript accelerator built into it. So it makes web pages go so much further. Faster, and your battery life go further because it's using hardware acceleration. I would say if you're looking for a click hole, I would look up all the different kinds of accelerators that are out there.
I love that. Okay. And Wesley, where can people find you online?
Wesley83 on Twitter. I'm also Wesley83 on LinkedIn, but if you're going to chat with me, Twitter's the place. Perfect. I get LinkedIn headhunted all the time. But I love talking and meeting people. So just send an at reply or my DMs are open. So just send me a note.
Wonderful. Well, this has been such a joy. Thank you so much for giving me your time today and sharing your story with the We Belong Here audience. I so, so appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. This has been a pleasure.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
And that's a wrap on today's episode. I'm Lauren Lee. Thank you for listening to We Belong Here. If you have any questions about this or any other episode, find me on Twitter at LoloCoding. That's LoloCoding. Shoot me an email or leave a comment on the We Belong Here website. If you enjoyed this episode, please, please, please subscribe and review the show on your podcast player of choice. And be sure to check us out next week for another story and lessons learned from an unconventional path to tech.